Oh, right. Well, welcome everyone. I reckon this is a pretty hard point in the day, and so I'm going to hopefully say not very much and invite you in a moment to close your eyes. So that could be the end of the whole thing. But I've called my paper Restorative Reciprocity, Contemplative Conversations in Nature, and it really is very much just wanted to share something that I've been involved in over the last 18 months, and you might see from the abstract there that actually kind of describes what it is I've been involved in. I was thinking about this contemplative conversations in nature, and I'm going, yeah, maybe it's within nature. It's not very much about seeing ourselves as part of nature, and it's just been really encouraging and affirming for me just to be listening to our keynote speakers, because I recognise that the themes that are coming out from them is, I guess, part of what's been resonating in me, and this is my very small attempt to try and explore what that means for me. So as a spiritual director, one of the things I've been really wanting to grow in is both my own contemplative practice, but also group spiritual direction or group work, contemplative listening in groups. And I've been using Parker Palmer's Circle of Trust Touchstones, and I mentioned that in my paper. But I was like, how do we hold contemplative space in community? But also, what does that mean then if we're part of the community of all of creation? How do we deepen our listening with one another as humans, but actually beyond that? So I've been, as I said, the last 18 months, every Saturday morning, small group of us, we meet in Belair National Park in one location, and we've been keep going back to the same location, and it has been that sense of developing relationship with a place, and it's been so beautiful to see it through the seasons and to want to build relationship with particular trees and particular birds and a particular creek. I started this out of my own sense of welcome, come in. My own sense of angst, I think, around the Australian Black Summer bushfires, I found that very disturbing, and I won't go into detail about that, but my paper explains some of my story, but wanting to respond out of that sense of grief and feeling the need to be more engaged in action, and then, of course, COVID hit. And there came a point where I recognised that I don't have the energy to sustain action out of a place of angst or anger or fear. I needed something much more restorative. But as I delved into that, I think what's come clear to me is that any of my response that hopes to be restorative needs to be in this give and take, this relational sense. So this is what I wrote after coming aware of my own need for restoration. Several months later, I sat listening under an old oak tree in Belair National Park, sensing the tree's generosity. It was giving shade and oxygen to me, nutrients and protection to the smaller, younger trees under its cover, and hospitality to birds and animals. The gratitude I felt and the wonder at this beautiful complex life sparked a longing to respond in some loving way. I gently touched the tree and thanked it for giving of itself. Feeling welcomed, I responded by blessing it with gratitude. I was glad this tree, this place exists, and my own existence in turn felt blessed by sensing my being too is wanted and is good and is welcome. This was an experience of simplicity, openness and ease. I was drawn into creatureliness and creativity, and I felt the joy of connection and awe which lightened my soul, and I was energised to share this goodness with others. And so I've been reflecting and thinking a little bit about that power of connection. It's our power of connection to nature, or as part of nature, to God, to self, to others. And I think in yesterday's address from Mary, you know, some of her words just made me feel like this was just me trying to respond to the longings of my own soul. But I find myself now, as I'm listening in this context and to others, that there is something stirring within us as an earth community. Words like, the world is full of persons, not all human, and is lived in relationship with others. Persons give and receive gifts. We need to re-immerse in the community of the earth. We need to attend to particularity of place, fostering the flourishing of life for all. I mean, they're words I've taken from what Mary was sharing yesterday. But I feel that this is simply a small expression of what has been stirring in my soul. And perhaps so what I'm inviting you into is, well, one, if you live locally, would you like to join me? You'd be very welcome. Or you might know someone who'd like to join our little group. Or what does it spark for you? What might this... What invitation might this bring to you in your context? I try and keep this incredibly simple. And I was just... I've been very influenced also by Mary Oliver. And this is the basic structure of how we do our Saturday mornings, very much based on Mary Oliver's instructions for living a life. Pay attention. Be astonished. Tell about it. And so that's what we do. We gather in our little group, in our little spot. I usually bring some kind of a reading. Often it's a poem like this. This is one, again, Mary Oliver. Isn't she wonderful? It doesn't have to be the blue iris. It could be weeds in a vacant lot or a few small stones. Just pay attention. Then patch a few words together. And don't try to make them elaborate. This isn't a contest, but the doorway into thanks and a silence in which another voice may speak. So the beautiful invitations of Mary Oliver, or whoever we bring a reading, a scripture, we sit in silence for 15 minutes. We then go for a little explore, a little walk, and then at the end of the hour we come back, and over morning tea I simply ask, what did you notice this morning? And we hold and we listen, and that's part of my learning to, or wanting to foster deep listening to one another also, and our learning to put into articulation that which is moving within us. So that's very simply what that's about. But I want to invite us now into those three beautiful invitations. This is just the little flyer that I've created about that. And if you would like me to send that to you, I can. But let's take some time now to pay attention, to be astonished, and then we will have some moments to tell one another about it. So perhaps you'd like to close your eyes where you are. Notice your breathing. Allow yourself to rest for a moment. And see if you can bring to mind something that brought you a sense of wonder or joy or connection recently. It could be very simple. A flower, an animal, the face of a loved one, some experience of beauty. It might be something you read or watched that left you curious, surprised, engaged in wanting to explore more. If you're struggling, perhaps think of a time in nature from your childhood, that sense of childhood connection with the earth, a and her creatures, and allow yourself to re-enter that memory. And as you bring something to mind, if you're able, see if you can deepen that experience by imagining the details. What's happening with your senses? What colours are you noticing? What are you hearing? Is there a scent or a texture? And what intrigues you? What are you curious about? Just allow your attention to deepen that experience. What are you feeling in your body? Yes, allow ourselves to feel some of the wonder, the astonishment. What's it like to be there, to witness and feel this experience? And what astonishes you about your own existence? So we've paid some attention, allowed ourselves to enter into our astonishment, our sense of wonder a little. Now's an opportunity to tell about it. So in twos or threes, and keeping it fairly simple, I just invite you to share something of what came to mind for you. And remember, the other person is very much there to provide some attentive listening and receiving. There's no need for discussion or questions. We are simply there to practice listening and being whatever we offer to be received as a gift, and the other person or persons to just say thank you and perhaps reflect back through your attentiveness and your facial expression something of your engagement. So give each other, make sure you give enough space for each person to at least express something, and then I'll draw us back together. So take some time to tell about it. I'm going to draw your attention back, sorry. I'm sure we could keep talking for a lot longer. Thank you, everyone. And I hope there was at least some chance to put into a few words something of what's been an experience of perhaps joy, wonder, beauty for you recently. I think you might have heard it as I was talking and I was describing it. I had that sense of interaction with the tree and my sense that I wanted to build relationship and respond, because I felt like I'd received. There was this back and forth, this sense of deepening relationship, which I'm really intrigued to explore. And in my paper, I've written a few of my reflections on that, which at this stage I really haven't had time to explore in huge depth. So there's part of me that really wants to say, if you really want to think much more deeply about this, read Mary's paper or Gary's paper, because that's what I'm looking forward to doing. But I was just wondering if people would like to feedback. What, as you either told or listen to someone else speak about their sense of astonishment as they were paying attention. What did you notice? What did you notice within yourselves?
Words weren't enough.
Ah.
So yeah. Body became like an expression of what was astonishing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, wonderful. Other thoughts?
A sense of radiance.
Radiance.
There's something shining.
Yeah, something shining. Beautiful. Yeah, yeah.
Beauty.
You notice a sense of beauty?
Yes.
Yeah.
There was a mutuality. We could connect the same sort of feeling through two different experiences.
Mm. Yeah.
A newness, a new experience that was intriguing and insightful.
Yeah. Yeah, I must say for our little group that's been meeting really regularly, there's days you look at the weather and you go, oh, you know, we're going to sit there. You know, what's it going to be like this morning? But, you know, we like to say to one another, well, there's no such thing as bad weather, there's just bad clothing. And, you know, try and dress appropriately. But there's something that we notice just in the coming back to a sense of connectedness, and then I like this idea of radiance, that as we listen to one another say, you know, when I say, what did you notice this morning? Ah, oh, did you see the black cockatoos came back again today, and I went back to my tree. Some of them, the one or two have been developing relationships with particular trees. And I noticed that they're now sprouting this, or, you know, what. And but the shared joy that just keeps bouncing off one another has been really restorative. And my hope too is that it energises us to then continue to act in restorative ways as we want to, you know, we all care about the earth. We want to live more restoratively, relationally, within some integrity. We're all challenged by that. But what I've noticed is that how this is giving us some energy. Other thoughts? Any other thoughts or feedback, questions before we finish?
I think the word that's coming through for me in all of that is wonder.
Yeah.
Going into a place of wonder, something outside of ourselves.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's much. Oh, did you want to say something? Sorry,
before. Yeah, I may have distracted myself for some of your presentation, or sorry, Rachel. But in hearing what you were saying, just I recorded just the joy of not just that encounter, but a shared encounter. So I have children that I get to spend our time outside with, and myself and my son had an encounter with Western Eagle a couple of weeks ago. And the joy of me helping him attend to that moment, and then remembering the joy as a child of my grandfather doing the same thing. Part of what I hear in what you're doing is the beauty of person to person helping one another just attend and develop those skills and attention to what's there.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you. Well, thanks everyone, and appreciate the opportunity to share. It's all on, is it? Okay. Sorry. So what stories are we listening to? Who are we listening to? Are they stories we want to listen to, or just our own stories? What I particularly wanted us, because the focus of the conference was non-Christians as well as Christians, so I wanted us to listen. What are the stories of young people today? Some are deeply concerned about the destruction of our planet. They worry about our overconsumption, our materialistic lifestyles, our addiction to coal and gas. They despair over the loss of flora and fauna all around the world. This lady I have never heard before, but I think she's an American singer, Anoa'i, who sings a song called Hopelessness. It's written to shock us into action by reveling in the agony of climate change,
that is set to bring upon us. She sings, all those rhinos and all those big mammals, I want to see them lying, crying in the fields. It's interesting, this painting almost echoes what she's just been singing. It's a 16th century artist. He paints frightened, charging animals, attempting escape of forest fire. The painting becomes more real when considered in the light of Joel 1, 18 to 20. How the cattle moan. They have no pasture. Even the flocks of sheep are suffering. To you, O Lord, I call. The fire has devoured the open pastures, and flames have burnt up all the trees of the field. I'm wondering what the painting says to us today about the present world and our environmental crisis. Do we ever contemplate the immense suffering of the non-human world as well as human beings? So, future scenarios, real ones. We're now in the red and it's going to get redder. The impacts of climate change, not just here in Australia, but most particularly in the developing world where they are suffering far, far, far more than us. Nature, merely an economic utility. Palm oil, trees are planted so we can have lots of palm oil or soya for cattle so we can eat meat, and the orangutan are disappearing. The removal of bushland here in Australia for yet more farming and more housing. Endangered animals disappearing rapidly here and around the world. Endangered plants, beautiful ones, all created by God, disappearing rapidly. So people are turning to all kinds of spirituality. They're seeking hope, solace, and community. But where is the Christian church? Are Christians reaching out to them with a message of hope and one that includes creation care? Tear Fund report, that a survey done just last year, reported that young people are very concerned about climate change. They want action now. 2 in 3 want action in church and among Christians. I'm going to briefly tell you my story. It's the context of my research. For a number of years, I worked on clearing weeds in some bushland in the Adelaide Hills near our home. One day I was pulling out a huge clump of this horrible colonial grass, and underneath was this beautiful prickly guinea flower. I was amazed, absolutely amazed. How on earth could it survive under this horrible clump of grass? I felt God was saying to me at that moment, these invasive grasses represent the destructive practices that have occurred in Australia since the settlers arrived. As a result, God's creation has been oppressed, invaded, and destroyed. It's struggling to survive and desperately needs our help. I felt also at that moment that God was speaking to me about to speak out and act against this injustice, but also that he'd entrusted me with a responsibility to pass on a vital message to evangelical Christians. This, I realized, would not be an easy task. Especially as I considered my inadequate understanding of the biblical reasons for creation care. I needed to examine my evangelical faith, to think through the biblical, moral, and ethical reasons as to why Christians are to care for creation. So I completed a master's of ministry focusing on eco-theology and the value of the creative arts in education. We needed to change our lifestyle. So eventually we downsized and we now live in the Aldinga Eco Arts Village, which is an intentional community caring for people, the earth and others. Before I started my doctorate of ministry, I had two propositions. The Bible clearly states that we are to care for creation, and many have spoken out but not been listened to. Second proposition, that some evangelical Christians have not connected their faith with creation care. This survey I did, Tearfund did, and I did something similar with church leaders, showed that many do not see care for creation as important. It's not as important as mission, or it's connected to the Greens or New Age philosophy. So my calling led to my research project, which was to design and trial a creative experiential workshop on creative care for evangelicals. Looks a bit complicated, this, but the design-based research is where you trial something. So I trialed the workshop twice and then had it evaluated by an external educator and then ended up with a template. So I did two workshops, and I think, Jenny's here. She was one of my participants. I had 12 participants in the first workshop and 8 in the second. Now, remember, this was during COVID, so it was pretty amazing I got any participants. So I had participants from a variety of different denominations. So, as I said, I feel it's very important that all education should include lots of the arts, not just cognitive things, so, and particularly a connection with the indigenous understanding of country as well. And many people have quoted Mary Oliver, and a wonderful poet. So this looks very full. This is what the workshop covered. We did manage to do this in a day. It flowed, it went well. And in fact, one of the most people really enjoyed was we went to Rondell Mall, a shopping centre, shopping area, reflected there, listened, smelt, felt, walked, and then to the botanical gardens and spent an hour there thinking, meditating, writing. Just what's materialism saying to us about this world? What's it doing to our nature, doing to the environment? So one of the exercises that we did at the end was to design or draw what they call a rich picture, which was what was the features of the workshop that had most influenced them. And so people were amazingly creative. I then interviewed them on their pictures and ended up with some extremely rich data. So the final workshop, I ended up with a template. And these are some of the reflections. So it was to ensure that the principles and features of the workshop include a variety of these things, to find a church or a parachurch group that will be willing to trial the workshop, to devise a facilitator's guide or a training of trainers, because I don't want to be the one going everywhere doing it. I want to empower others to do this type of workshop. Be willing to adapt the workshop, perhaps put some content online, and the rest could actually happen in one venue. And perhaps to include the workshop in maybe even get it into an ALF course or with the Arusha Eco Church scheme, which that's another story, what that's about. So I would like you now, I've got some pens and paper, to draw a picture. If you're not into drawing, it doesn't matter. Just scribble something, some thoughts on this presentation, how it may have spoken to you, and then you could write down or draw some actions that could happen in your church or in your personal life. You can do it together. So you can do it as a group or you can do it individually. And then when you've done it, you can share with each other, and then I can hear from you all as well.
Righto, good afternoon. So, my name's John. So I'm a student at Tabor College, though I live in Port Augusta, which is about 320 kilometres north of here. This presentation is from actually a college project, which I've then expanded a little bit. Also, I just wanted to say as we start that the visitors to Australia might not know, but there's a thing in Australia called NAIDOC Week, which is National Aboriginal and Islander Day of Celebration, which started off as a day. So the celebration is, I think the idea is sort of pride and joy and just seeing the goodness of Aboriginal culture and the contribution that Aboriginal people make to the nation. And it's just an opportunity to, for the entire nation to basically say thank you and this is good. And each year there's a theme to NAIDOC Week. So NAIDOC Week was from last Sunday through this present week to next Sunday. And this year's theme is for our elders. And so there are two elders in particular that I'd just like to highlight and acknowledge right now. So one is a guy called Bob Randall, who I'll be talking about in the paper, who I've never actually met in person yet. And the other is a lady from Port Augusta called Auntie Denise Champion, the Reverend Dr. Auntie Denise Champion, who's been a sort of hero theological mentor to me a little bit and a friend. And so, this presentation is for them in particular. Now, Kanyini is a Aboriginal word from the Yankacharra language. Yankacharra country and Yankacharra people are from central Australia, and it's a country around Uluru and then spreading south and east from there down into the northern part of South Australia. So if you've heard of the APY lands in South Australia, the Y is Yankacharra. And just to be clear, I'm sure you've gathered, but I'm not Aboriginal myself. So I'm from the UK originally, came to Australia about 25, 26 years ago. So the places that have been formative for me are obviously Derbyshire, a town called Dronfield where I grew up, when there's the Peak District there, which is just relatively wild country for that part of the world. And that was a place that I still love. Then Alice Springs and the Western McDonald's and Eastern McDonald Ranges, again, very significant for me. They're sort of just part of the country that loved me and accepted me and healed me, to which I belong. And then the other place would be the Flinders Ranges, with Port Augusta is the town I live in, which is within striking range of the Flinders Ranges. So that's the kind of significant towns and significant country for me. Now then, so I'm not Aboriginal. So my teacher about Kanyini has been a Yankacharra elder, as I mentioned, called Bob Randall, or Uncle Bob, who I've never met in person, and he passed away in 2015. So it won't be in this body. I don't think I'll meet him. But he wrote his autobiography called Songman in 2003, and he narrated and co-produced a documentary movie entitled Kanyini in 2006. And in both of these publications, what he was about, what he was trying to do, was essentially cultural education for people just like me, for non-Aboriginal people, to understand something of Aboriginal spirituality, Aboriginal culture, and also an exercise of truth-telling of the Aboriginal experience of British colonisation. Bearing in mind, I watched this as a British person myself. So although I'm not Aboriginal, I would hopefully, I think, have his blessing and his encouragement to present this today as an exercise in listening across cultures. And in the movie, actually, he explicitly invites white folk to come and sit down with him and just listen and learn and take heed of an alternative way to do things. So that's something about what I'm doing in this presentation. But I do acknowledge Kanyini is First Nations intellectual property. I'm not a First Nations person myself. So, this paper began as a college assignment looking at Kanyini and spiritual well-being in the subject Exploring Contemporary Spirituality. Then for this presentation, I then also asked how does both Kanyini and spiritual well-being relate to the Christian tradition, to Christian experience, Christian theology. And then the application is how do we then support spiritual well-being inside and outside the churches as Christians, having listened in the light of, with the wisdom of Kanyini. So it ends up being something like a panel discussion between four voices in my paper. So there's a 4,000-word paper behind this, which you're welcome to read at your leisure once it's put out. So the first voice is my voice. So part of the original research project was an autoethnographic exercise of a moment of spiritual significance. And for me, that was in Mambre Creek of Mount Remarkable National Park. So this photograph is Alligator Gorge, which is a different part of Mount Remarkable National Park. That's Nukunu country, which is one of the people further north from here. The initial research involved this autoethnographic moment, recounting one dictated storytelling, and then analyse the transcript with a literature review and a discussion. So there's my voice, then there's the voice of Kanyini, as taught by Bob Randall, the elder I mentioned. Then there is spiritual well-being in its sort of secular form, really. I got into spiritual well-being, or I was irritated by spiritual well-being, because I was working as a school pastoral care worker and tasked with supporting spiritual well-being in a secular setting, but no one could actually tell me what that was and how I was to do that without talking about God, which was outside the rules. So, and then the last bit would be the Christian tradition, as I understand it, in a very sort of limited theological reflection, but there's a stage of theological reflection in the paper. It works. So, as fast as I can now, I apologise, this might be death by PowerPoint, but NICA, which is the National Interfaith Coalition on Aging in Washington, D.C., in 1975, put this out there as like an opening definition of spiritual well-being. They were the first people I'm aware of to publish on the topic. They said it is the affirmation of life in relationship with God, self, community, and environment that nurtures and celebrates wholeness. So you notice there's four directions of relationship in that definition: to self, to God, to community, and environment. Those four definitions were taken up by John Fisher, who's an Australian guy who's published a lot in the field. And he regards them as domains of human existence and experience. So the relationship with others became the communal domain. Relationship with the environment became the environmental domain. Relationship to God, transcendental domain. Relationship to my inner self is personal domain. And that was the four domains model of spiritual well-being, which seemed to be the mainstream accepted model of spiritual well-being in the literature as I could see it at the time I did my literature review. This was summarised by Hans Borden Haugen in 2018, based on the Four Domains model, who summarised it as being mostly about meaning-making, enhanced awareness and connectedness. So Kanyini, so by Bob Randall, the single, short, most kind of closest English word of Kanyini would be holding, like you might hold a child, hold a baby. So it's a connection, but with nurturance and love. So there's unconditional love involved, and there is a responsibility to care, a responsibility for nurturance. Bob Randall describes it as a sacred responsibility, as a web of relationships. It's the principle of connectedness through caring and responsibility, those key words again, that underpins Aboriginal life, linking four main areas of responsibility. And these are Yankacharra words, but chukapa, which is the philosophy or the worldview, the law, the religion, and there's no one single English word that would cover chukapa. Gura, which is country, walcha, which is kinship or family, and kurunpa, which is our spirit, soul, and psyche. So those blue circles, those are those like lines of responsibility would be Bob Randall's description of Cagnini and the English translations nearby. So it occurred to me as I was doing this research that actually there is some similarity between John Fisher's Four Domains model, which is obviously a very Western model, so had no listening to indigenous voices in his development of that, and actually Cagnini, which has, you know, who knows, 50,000 years worth of history behind it from deep time, handed down through Bob Randall. So there is some similarity between country and environmental domain. There's some similarity between kinship and family and communal domain, between Koanpa and the personal domain, and between Chukapa and transcendental domain. Is that working? Yeah. So the directions of relationship are quite similar. What is different is the quality of the relationships. So in Cagnini, there is clearly interrelationship between all of these four fields. So if you remember back to the four domains model, yeah, that's me, I'm the white circle in the middle, and I've got relationships in all these different directions. But I can compartmentalise my life, if you like. So, you know, the communal domain doesn't necessarily need to talk to the transcendental domain or anything else. I can say, this is me, this is my relationship to the environment, this is my relationship to God. Getting back to Sally's point about, you know, we can believe in God or trust God in an evangelical kind of way without necessarily feeling an obligation to the environment in the Western model. The Aboriginal model, this is a bit busy, but it's just much more connected. There's lines everywhere. So you cannot fulfill your responsibility to Chukapa without also fulfilling your responsibility to Gura, to the country. And if you do that, you're bound to, you can only do it in community, in Welcher, and it builds community in Welcher, and it builds Kurumpa, you know, personal well-being. So you just cannot go chopping up these different relationships. They are just interconnected. Yeah, other aspects of the quality of these relationships would be unconditional love, a sense of being family with all things, a responsibility, and also just an expectation of the agency to be able to fulfil that responsibility, and a responsibility to make others have the agency to be able to fulfil their responsibilities, dignity and equality. So my paper, as I've said, moves from the autoethnography, the first bit, which is an account of my experience with a commentary and analysis, through talking about Cagnini, talking about spiritual well-being, talking about the relationship of Cagnini to spiritual well-being, essentially what we, yeah, the richer way of understanding spiritual well-being in the light of Cagnini is what I'm looking at, and then comparing both of those with a theological reflection with Christian tradition. And then the application is how do we go about supporting that? Okay, I'm supposed to present the main idea of the paper, and there's 1,000 little ideas swimming around in it, but the main idea would be something like this, that Australian Aboriginal spirituality has a depth of wisdom on spiritual well-being, which will come as no surprise to most people in the room. Another way of putting that is, as a non-Aboriginal person, I am led to a richer understanding of spiritual well-being by listening humbly and respectfully to Cagnini. So those are some of the sub-ideas, which I'll just move on for time, but if you want to read more about that, I elaborate in the paper, but interconnectedness, the centrality of country, the importance of responsibility. The other thing I'll just mention is, in my theological reflection part of the paper, I say that the relationships and responsibilities of both Cagnini and spiritual well-being from the Four Domains model are onto-relationships and onto-responsibilities from a Christian perspective. So onto-responsibility is just a word I made up along the same pattern as onto-relationship. But essentially, I was trying to convey something that there are actually responsibilities which are an intrinsic part of our humanity, which have been given to us by God in our creation as human beings. And so in arguing that, I look at Genesis and the creation stories. Obviously, Cain and Abel, you know, am I my brother's keeper? Yes, yes you are, and he's also yours. And then the words of Jesus. Righto, so that's our didactic 10 minutes. Sorry about the time. Okay, next thing, how do we play with this for a little while? What I was imagining we might do is a veranda conversation, this is just in your own imagination, with Bob Randall. In the movie, he invites us to come and listen. So I haven't got a picture of him on purpose, but if you've seen the movie, you might have your own image. But he's an Aboriginal man, mid-70s, so wild grey hair, big grey beard, and he's got sort of eyes that are kind, but they're penetrating. And his face looks generous as you're sitting with him. But again, it's not naive. Like, you know, he knows what's going on. He knows the story. So I might sit with Uncle Bob and I'll say something like, firstly, you know, thank you, Uncle Bob, for the opportunity to just be here and talk with you. You know, I really appreciate that. Also, I'd just like to say very sorry about, yeah, just the way you and your people have been treated by my people over, you know, a long period of time. And thank you for just, you know, telling the truth of that in your movie. And he was a member of the Stolen Generations himself. He talks about being abducted at the age of 6 or 7 from his family, sent to one institution in Alice Springs, sent to another institution on the far top coast, northern coast of Australia. Didn't see any of his family members until he's 45, I think. But just, yeah, I'm sorry for the trauma, basically. But I am interested in learning about spiritual well-being. So if you wouldn't mind, I'd just be really interested to know how you see that. What would you say? And so, and, you know, we're not very good at this, but we are actually slowly realising that we need to listen. And he might answer something along the lines of, well, you know, you white people, you talk about spiritual well-being as if you can separate it from any other kind of well-being. But we can't do that, because to us, everything is connected. But what I'll do is I'll tell you about Kanyini, because if you understand about Kanyini, then you're off to a good start. And then off we'd go. So a question for you to just think about, I'll ask a couple more questions and then we'll have a bit of time, is what would you like to ask Uncle Bob if you had that opportunity? Next point, suppose we were use Kanyini of God for Kingdom of God. Would that work? What would we gain? What would we lose? How do you respond to that? The reason I ask that question is from Auntie Denise Champion, who in one of her books just sort of touches on the idea that actually, if you're serious about being Christian in an Utnamutna way, she's an Utnamutna lady from the Northern Flinders Ranges, then you need to find, well, we need to find, was her words, better language than kingdom. Because obviously Aboriginal people don't do kings, and their experience of monarchy has been oppressive, abusive. So how about if you think of the character of God and Kanyini being connection of unconditional love, responsibility and unity, is Kingdom of God a viable alternative? Next, Kanyini as expressing human onto responsibilities, is that a useful idea? Do you think it's valid? What is the significance or the implications if we do not fulfil our onto responsibilities? What does that do about us as humans and us and the creation? And then lastly, just what are the environmental implications of human spiritual well-being? So, you know, is there a ceiling to our spiritual well-being by our shoddy treatments of the planet and creation? Have 4 or 5 minutes? 5 minutes, excellent. So probably just in your tables, talk about this or anything else you'd like to, and then we'll call it to an order in about 5 minutes' time. Yeah. We'll have 1 minute. I thought you were summoning me then, but no.
No, I'm not.
I reckon 22 on this would be about when you said the 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want one?
I'll call them to order. Yeah. Ten past. Yeah. No. Yeah, we got a 10 minutes by because they finished late. Yeah. Okie dokie, back we come. Okay, I won't go around all tables, just you keep your own learning, as it were. I do just want to say thank you, though, to Bob Randall for putting his teaching out there in the first place, making the movie, and for the benefit of people like me and you. I'd also like to say thank you to Auntie Denise, Phil Daughtry, who encouraged me to do this presentation in the first place, Rosemary DeWurse, who gave me feedback on the paper. So thank you very much.
You.
Time to move across back into the thing. Yeah, so...